Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
Shang-a-lang, the Bay City Rollers. Joining us on the line now is Stuart Woody Wood, who rose to fame at the age of 16 as the guitarist and youngest member to join the Bay City Rollers. The band went on to dominate the charts, achieving 10 top 10 hit singles, 4 top 10 albums and 2 number 1 singles, selling over 120 million records. His memoir is out now. It's called Mania, Tartan Turmoil and My Life at a Bay City Roller. Welcome to the show, Stuart.
Thank you, Hannah. It's lovely to be here.
How are you? I'm fine, thank you. How are you? It's great to have you with us.
It's very nice to be here. The weather is raining at the moment. It was sunny yesterday, but we're back to good old Scottish weather.
Feels more normal and comfortable.
Yeah, keeps it green. That's what I like to see.
Oh, nice one. I must ask you, how does it make you feel listening to the music? Do you think, oh, it's that song again? Or does it automatically make you smile and think of, great memories?
It's funny, I went through a period, probably the 80s, early 90s, where I went off not all our songs, but certainly a lot of them, and Chia Lang being one of them. But it kind of, it's done full circle. It's gone back to being fresh again. We did a reunion back in 2015. And just seeing that the audience are getting back in amongst it and playing that song, it goes down so well. Everybody gets so kind of up. It's a nice, upbeat, happy kind of here. But you know, especially in these days when everything's a bit up in the air, it's stuff like that that kind of takes you away and it's nostalgic. We re-recorded it last year. We got a top 20 out of it. We were back in the charts. So I love it. It's a brilliant song.
Oh, amazing. And it, I mean, that must be one of the greatest things when you're performing live and all the fans in front of you are singing the words back at you. That must be a really wonderful feeling, knowing how happy they are to be there and that they know all the words.
It is. It's a goosebumpy moment. All the tartans there. It's funny as well because the fans, they're all sort of in their 50s, 60s, early 70s, some of them. And they come along with maybe their grandkids or their sons or daughters, nieces, nephews. And there's a kind of, you know, a vibe that's in amongst, you know, maybe there's four of them there that from the same family. The younger ones, they've nicked their parents' scarf and they're the ones that are kind of shaking it above their heads. So it's just good all round.
Yeah, lovely. And I want to take you back to the beginning, to the early days. I understand you left school at 15 to pursue a career as an electrician. What happened between that moment and the Bay City Rollers the following year?
Oh, it was a great bright spark, so it was. That came, I mean, I was in a band, just my school pals, 14 probably, 15 was when, you know, one of my pals said, we're starting a band, do you want to be in it? And I couldn't play guitar. I could play trumpet, clarinet, piano, a bit of this, bit of that, you know, the recorder, all these sort of things. And I don't have a guitar. It's okay, I've got two guitars you can have or borrow one of my guitars. So it kind of started there and I got into the band and it was just a good fun thing to do. You know, I've kind of been a practical sort of person and kind of having a guitar and travelling about, it was a big adventure. It was great fun to do it, you know, just life on the road. And then obviously I got very lucky after a year. Bay City Rollers, the manager asked, do you want to join our band? And I wasn't going to turn that down. You know, the band had, let me see, the band started in the mid-60s. They had their first hit in 1971, Keep On Dancing. So they'd kind of been working that band for 6-7 years before I joined. There was a lot of work and effort. They were playing all over the country. Everybody in Scotland knew who they were. After that hit in 71, they were number 9 UK chart. So it was a big thing. And, you know, I'd started off, well, being an electrician, I was still wanting to be in a band. And the wee band I was in, we were kind of gigging about here, gigging there. We came across the Rollers. I got a job as a roadie working for them. And that was still the days when Nobby Clark was the singer, the guy that kind of did the Keep On Dancing song. Mm. So it was a kind of just, it was a path that I got very lucky in the right place at the right time. And there's me a year playing in a band, and that's been one of the biggest, or to become one of the biggest bands in the world. So very, very lucky, very grateful, thank goodness.
Yeah, amazing. And what was it like being the youngest? Because sometimes that can be a really good thing and sometimes not so much.
No, I think, I mean, after a while, you kind of got to know people. But yeah, I was a bit, you know, the young one, all the sort of practical jokes and all that kind of stuff would... You know, that there was the bairn of the band.
Yeah. And with what about the glitz and glamour of it all? Again, from a very young age, being whisked away in limousines and all the fans screaming and crying in your face. Was it overwhelming? Were you kind of aware at the time, this is huge? Or, you know, how did you feel about all of that?
I think because I was so young, and it's a funny one. It's kind of, you don't realise it's happening until you look back and it's kind of over. You know, I've kind of likened it to putting your finger in a cold glass of water and somebody's pouring hot water in it. It takes a while to feel that heat. Mm. And if you had the hot water to begin with, you would dip your finger in it and immediately pull it out because it's like boiling hot. So it was a kind of gradual thing. And it didn't really phase me, I think, because I was young and because to me it was more the adventure. You know, you're getting up on stage and you've got thousands of screaming people there, but it didn't start like that. It was, you know, hundreds of screaming people. It just became a bit chaotic after a while.
Yeah.
But we were you know, we were all sort of used to it. It was a kind of normal day for us.
And did you all have your clear roles in the band? I don't mean instrumentally necessarily, but who did what in terms of staging and songwriting and all that kind of thing?
Yeah, it kind of developed. You know, when I joined the band, Derek Faulkner, he was the sort of musician in the band. He kind of called the shots, you know, what songs we're going to do, you know, who's going to play what on them. So he was sort of my mentor when I joined, and I learned a lot from him. But the other guys also, you know, the drummer, the bass player, Alan and Derek, they were great. It was solid, probably because they were brothers, and these guys had been playing 7 years and a lot of gigs, you know, thousands of gigs. So they were kind of very experienced. I could only look on in awe. But, you know, I picked up a few tricks, learned a few things. Yeah, it was a great experience.
Yeah. And do you remember the moment when you all kind of realised that you'd gone from having, as you say, a few hundred fans to thousands to Rollermania sweeping the globe? Was there a moment that you kind of went, wow, we've really made it now?
Again, it was just because it was so gradual. It became more obvious when we maybe see a documentary many decades later and you look back and you go, oh, wow, yeah, that did get pretty mad. But at the time, you just weren't aware. You know, it just became a normal thing. It was gradual. It felt natural. But it sort of slowed down. It was more noticeable. But, you know, thankfully, because we all love to play, you know, Les, he left in 78. We continued up until about probably 82. I only stopped playing with the Rollers, or the Rollers sort of split, not split as such. We just stopped touring because there was so much business going on. And it was, you know, sitting in lawyers' offices and listen to lawyers chat, and lawyers have their lawyers and accountants, and it just became like a real, I don't want to swear,
but you know, you're fine.
Anything that happened. So, yeah. You know, and the singer at the time, the two of us, we moved out to Los Angeles for a while and we formed a 3-piece band and, you know, just different bands over the years from that point, all in the 80s, in fact. I was in two different bands. I then come back to the UK again and, you know, a reunion here, a reunion there. This sort of worked, but they didn't. And, you know, eventually we're kind of where we are now. The band's still very much going. But unfortunately, it's only myself, one of the originals, that's in it.
Oh, and what's it like performing with other people, being the only original in it?
I mean, it's fine for me because the love is playing. That is the passion is just that. You know, even when they stopped kind of hitting the charts and all, it didn't matter because if I snapped a string, that would be more upsetting. Or if I got a chord wrong or, you know, something didn't work out musically, that would be more upsetting. But, you know, the guys that are in the band now, they're all excellent musicians, are really nice people. We all get on like a house on fire and lots of laughs, kind of like it used to be a way back in the beginning before it all kind of went a bit topsy-turvy, let's say.
Yeah, and you talk a lot about that in the book, the fact that the music industry wasn't all glitz and glamour and all the ruthless machinery behind the scenes. Was that a surprise to you when that all started to unravel itself?
Not so much a surprise. It just became disappointing. You know, when you kind of, I mean, I'd never thought about money. I never thought, how much am I making here? Oh, I'm going to make a fortune from that. That wasn't in my mind. It was only, I don't know, I can't speak for the other guys. You know, they might have been a bit more looking at that side of things. But personally, I didn't. And, you know, I kind of wish I had. If I could put the head I've got on now, what's it they say? Youth is wasted on the young. But all that experience, you know, I've got a lot of experience now, and if I could have just a touch of that back then, it would have been different financially, you know, those early days. But yeah, we were just kind of ripped off, taken for a ride. We signed the wrong things. We took on the wrong people. We had just bad advice all the way through the whole thing. But thankfully, musically, you know, back to songs like Shang-A-Lang, I mean, that's 50 years old and it's still going strong.
Amazing. Yeah, it's awful, isn't it? There are lots of situations like that when band members, songwriters, you know, anyone involved in the music industry has signed the wrong thing or been given the wrong advice and haven't earned the money that they've deserved and should have done. It seems like there's a lot of corruption. Do you think things have got better in the music industry in your experience or worse since back in the day?
I mean, I'm sure it still goes on. There's still people, because it's such a big money-making industry, it attracts all types of people. There's obviously a lot of crooks and sharks and all kinds of things out there. Thankfully, now there's a lot more protection that goes on.
Right.
You know, for example, MCPS, Performing Rights Society, PRS, you can have your songs protected. They can't just steal them. You're represented by proper legal firms. They're just a lot. And kids as well, there's so many college courses that a lot of people that want to be in the music industry, some of them, if not all of them, or most of them, they go to these courses and they learn all about that. I did a bit of lecturing through in Glasgow and Kelvin College for about 10, 15 years, I think. It was just this one day a week thing. And you've got students coming in that, you know, they think the music industry, oh, I want to be a pop star. You know, and that's the last thing you want to get in the industry, to want to be a pop star. It's just, well, hold on, wait a minute. Let me tell you a few stories here. So, you know, and it's that business sense. They learn, they don't just learn about sound production. They're learning about how the business works and how contracts work and record companies, how they operate, all that stuff. There's a lot more to it. So they're getting armed, which we weren't. You know, we were just off the street in a band at a gig and just enjoying that part of it. You never gave money or business a thought.
Yeah. It is weird now how, you know, over the years, buying a single or buying an album, obviously with inflation, got more and more expensive, and now it's all free. I mean, that's a very odd concept, isn't it? The idea that people can download whatever songs or albums that they want and not pay any money for them.
I know, it's more promotion now. If you've got something, you know, on Spotify, all these sort of download companies, it's really just promotion for the band. You know, you make pennies, or you can sell 100,000 and come away with like 5p or whatever it is, or downloads. So it's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
That might change. But again, it's sort of, if it would sort your head if you're really enjoying doing it for the passion of playing in a band or solo or whatever, you really have to love doing it, and then all that doesn't matter anyway. And your gigs is where, you know, you can make money, business, your product for sale, your recordings, merchandise, that kind of thing. So again, and you know, some bands will break into that massive, there's going to be a massive individual or band before you know it. They come around all the time, thank goodness.
Yeah. And I'll never forget the moment in the film Love Actually when Bye Bye Baby was used as a funeral song. And I'm sure it must be up there as one of the big funeral songs. I'm guessing when you did the song, you didn't think for one minute that would happen.
No, not at all. It was like that Robin Hood story. Somebody, when they were getting married, they wanted the, you know, that lovely, beautiful song. I forget the film it was in. So a nice kind of ballad version of the Robin Hood theme. And then the person, when they were getting married, they walked down the aisle and actually started playing the original Robin Hood, riding through the glen. It was like classic. So.
Instead of everything I do it for you.
That's the one, yeah. That was the one.
Oh, amazing. And if you had, massively putting you on the spot now, but if you had to pick out one moment from your time, I know you're, as you say, you're still performing with the Bay City Rollers, but one kind of standout moment in your career that you, whenever you think about it, really makes you smile and reminisce in a really positive way, what would it be?
I think it was the year before last. One of the singers in our band, John McLaughlin, and myself, we did a guest spot for Rod Stewart Rod Stewart played Edinburgh Castle, and there was a bit, he does like a 2.5 hour set. It's quite amazing. And about the last half hour, we got called up, and it was just myself with the acoustic, John singing, me singing the harmony. We did a version of the Proclaimers. What was the song? Sunshine and Leaf.
Okay, I nearly
forgot it. Goodness sakes. But yeah, Sunshine and Leaf. And you know, Edinburgh is my hometown. And to be in the castle, Esplanade, playing to thousands of people, looking out over Edinburgh, it was pretty spectacular. You know, again, the old goosebump moment was amazing.
I bet. Wonderful. And have you stayed in touch with any of the original members from back in the day? Are some of you still friends?
Yeah, Nobby Clark, the original singer, we're still pals. You know, he came up and guested with us at Christmas just the last year there. It was brilliant. We'd kind of lost touch for a while. Nobby was doing his own thing, but he's still out there. He still, you know, sings and writes and plays. He had something in the chart not so long ago. The sort of classic five, unfortunately, two of the guys, they passed.
Yeah.
There's only Eric and Derek that are left. And I've just lost contact with them. I did try to contact them, in fairness, but they've not got back. So I gave up with that one.
Yeah. Well, you have the memories and the music.
yeah, definitely.
Well, it's been lovely to chat with you, Stuart Wood. Thank you so much for joining us. And if listeners want to get a copy of Mania, Tartan Turmoil and My Life as a Bay City Roller, it's available on our website, tre.radio. Stuart, thank you so much.
Hannah, lovely to chat to you. You take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks very much. Bye.